This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila.
And we are Zwei Fat Chicks. And this episode is on tea.
This is your Zwei Fat Chicks primer to tea.
Before we start, we'll talk a little bit about lunch, too.
Yeah, true.
Well, right now we're down at Coffee Culture downtown in Oshawa
on King Street.
And it has delicious coffee and delicious cookies and nice comfy surroundings to record in. And we went to lunch today at Wimpy's Diner.
And it was awesome.
It was huge. Wimpy's is a provincial chain. It's all over Ontario. There's like 50 of them or something. And it's like Wimpy from Popeye.
Yeah. Like I'll gladly pay you on Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Exactly. And it's a traditional looking diner inside. You know, you've got diner food. They have milkshakes.
Little
they have
jukeboxes.
Burgers. Yeah, little cute little jukeboxes at your table. Club sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of tasty stuff. And we got the burgers. And they were huge.
We got the Wimpy burgers. We could have probably gotten the junior burgers.
We should have gotten the junior burgers, because the junior burgers are only 6 ounces. The Wimpy burgers are 10.
And they're oval-shaped, and they hang off the buns and everything.
But they're huge. Way more than one person should have. But they're tasty. The prices are really good. I know it's a chain, and chains are evil, but it's a small provincial chain.
Which makes it inherently less evil.
Yes.
And at least you know what you're going to get whenever you're driving around.
Makes it more chaotic neutral than true evil, so we can abide by that.
Yes.
And the souls of the damned have stopped screaming inside the espresso machine, so we can continue now.
All right.
So, we strongly recommend it. You might want to get the junior burger, unless you're like Aaron or Patrick, and then go ahead and get the giant burger of
the Wimpy burger,
which
with
we
fries
are never going to do
a
again.
Drink. Yeah.
God. Never going to do that again. We couldn't even get pie. It was so depressing.
I know.
But, on to Tay. Now, this episode is going to be a lot of Sheila talking, because she is the tea expert. I am just the tea swiller. But when we met, my idea of tea, I knew there was green tea and Lipton.
And Lipton.
Yes. That was it. I mean, literally the red rose stuff. I was like, oh, it's so exotic. What's red rose? Which is like, you know, Lipton.
Yeah, so, it's the Canadian version of like Tetley or Lipton.
Yeah, I mean, Tetley was like, ooh, the bags are round. Oh my.
They make them taste better.
Yes, they do.
I swear it makes a difference.
I know.
Even though it shouldn't. I remember the commercials when I was a kid, and I'll see if I can find one of these on YouTube, where they had, like, when they introduced the round tea bags, mm-hmm. I think I was, like, was it 12 or 13, maybe?
Yeah, I was, like, a preteen.
And they were like, the water flow is able to get into the tea easier, so it gives you more flavor per cup.
Yes, it was so strange. But it was a good marketing technique.
Yeah.
I can't really fault them.
I think it does taste better, actually. I don't know, maybe it's just psychosomatic.
Probably. We'll have to do a blind taste test someday.
That'd be cool.
Yes. Can you tell the difference between bag tea and loose leaf tea?
Ooh.
Which we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah.
But let's break it down. Go ahead and give us your categories of tea by Sheila.
So they all come from the same plant. It's all the same species. But you've got your black teas, your green teas, and then you've got over to the side, well, I guess oolong. And then over to the side, you've got your herbal teas. And underneath, kind of in the same sandbox as herbal teas, you've got your rooibos, which is the African red tea.
Is that a tea plant, too?
No, it is a different plant. It's like a bush, kind of. So that's why it kind of fits more nicely into the herbal tea. Whereas you've got its herbs, spices, dried flowers, any other type of plant that you would steep the leaves from to get a hot beverage or to get an infused beverage, that would be an herbal tea. So going way back over to the black teas, what separates the black teas from the green teas is that the leaves are processed differently. The green teas are just dried. That's it. The black teas, they dry them, then they oxidize them, or sometimes people call it fermenting. Basically, you're applying oxygen to them, and then you dry them again to stop the oxidization process. And that's what turns the tea leaves black and gives it a more robust flavor. It's almost like toasting them.
Mm.
So...
okay. And then the herbal teas and the scary rooibos teas are just a totally different animal, but they're called teas because they
you serve them the same way.
Exactly. It refers more to the process of making a cup of it than it does the actual source of the leaf and stuff inside your bag or cup.
Right. Like if you remember your Jacques Cartier explorer history when the Native Americans gave them spruce tea. There was no tea leaves in it. It was just spruce needles that they steeped in hot water
mm-hmm.
to make a nutritious beverage that gave them lots of vitamin C so that the Native Americans didn't get scurvy.
It's just like how you can roast something or something's called a roast kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a matter of terminology.
You can tea something, though we don't use tea as a verb.
No,
or you can
say
tea.
Steep.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's almost, it could be a synonym for steep if we were to like use our superpowers and change the English language as we know it. Let's do it. Let's just use our psychic powers and change the English language. Tea is now a verb. Go forth and use it. Okay. Sorry.
And then you have oolong, which is kind of somewhere in between. Because oolong is dried, but then it's smoked instead of actually being oxidized.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So that's why oolong is kind of like the hybrid.
Oh, I love oolong, though.
It's very, very good. I didn't really ever try oolong until recently, and it's a good tea.
Well, there's even different degrees of green tea, because yeah. I know the gunpowder tea almost tastes like a black tea, too.
Just in its robustness.
Yes,
yeah.
It's so hearty. So, let's talk about black tea.
Okay.
This is the one everybody knows.
Back to black tea.
If you've had iced tea, you've had black tea.
Yeah, generally. Or just tea, as they call it
in
the South.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's an interesting regionalism in and of itself. Because if you order tea in Canada, you're getting a big cup of hot tea.
Mm-hmm.
If you order tea in anywhere south of West Virginia's state line, between that and Pennsylvania, you're getting a big cup of iced tea.
It's coming with a pound of sugar and a bunch of ice cubes. You can't separate the two.
Possibly a slice of lemon.
Yes, if you're lucky. So you don't get scurvy.
Yes. If you're the type of person that wants to try and drink some more tea, because it does have health benefits. It's full of antioxidants. It is refreshing, and it does hydrate you while stimulating you. The Chinese monks used to drink it for their... well, I guess if you'd never ever had caffeine before, and you'd never ever had anything like that, and all of a sudden you've got this big cup of hot, inviting tea, yeah, you'd be able to pray all night, too.
Yeah. Because you'd have no, like, caffeine resistance, no internal tolerance to it. You'd just be hopped up on it. That'd be great.
Exactly. So the Chinese monks that originally started drinking tea, they drank it for health benefits, because everything is for your health, right? And they also drank it to aid in their meditation, to keep them focused, because it's uplifting, but you don't really get a caffeine crash from tea.
No, not like you do from, like, Red Bull or espresso.
Exactly.
Yeah. So black teas.
Black teas. So if you wanted to start drinking more tea and incorporate it into your life, one of the best things to do probably would be to drink a little bit less coffee and start substituting, when you'd normally have that, some breakfast teas. And I would heartily recommend English, Irish, or Scottish breakfast teas. The heartiest, stoutest breakfast tea we've ever had was Tyler's of Harrogate's Scottish breakfast tea. That's a kick in the pants in the morning that'll get you out there throwing cavers and I don't know.
You know how, like, people say it'll put hair on your chest? This stuff is so robust. I swear to God, I think the lip of my cup started growing hair before I drank it. It was
really
like coffee.
Really great flavor,
but yeah.
It was the same intensity as coffee. The same sort of robustness. So then, underneath that, with the rest of everybody else, if you don't need that much help in the morning, you can have Irish breakfast tea, and Twinings makes a really good Irish breakfast
tea. Yes,
and one of the things I do like about Twinings is they have really great bag tea, which is available pretty much
everywhere. All over the continent.
If you go online or if you go into specialty shops, you can get their tea loose leaf, and that's even better.
Mm-hmm.
But they make it real easy. They want you to buy their product. So they have like a little leaf system, and the more leaves that are colored in on the front, the more robust it is. So if you're like, I feel like something mild, you can pick something with one leaf. If you want something heartier, you can get this Irish breakfast tea that has 5 leaves.
It goes up to 11 leaves. No,
yes.
It doesn't. Spinal tap. It
goes all the way around the tin.
No. Well, also with Twinings, because it's available everywhere, it's great. It's a little harder, like you said, to get the loose leaf.
Mm-hmm.
We were in a grocery store up here, and they had some of the Twinings loose leaf teas on sale. They were clearing them out. And I had to, like, physically, bodily keep Sheila from buying the whole bin. Because she was just going to start grabbing them all.
Well,
going up
really
to the register.
Price, their Earl Grey is awesome.
It is. Twinings has a killer Earl Grey, and they also have one of my favorite blends, the Lady Grey, which is like Earl Grey, but milder. Probably a good segue to talk about Earl Grey, because it's a very popular tea because of a certain science fiction show.
Yes.
At least among nerds, it's popular because of that, but it's
Earl
popular
Grey,
in
hot.
And of itself. Yes.
Is that how you used to...
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
Yeah, yes. It had like the different classifications
yes.
of it. Earl Grey, I'm sure that there was somebody out there called Earl Grey that wanted to have something extra added, because I imagine back then you could get stuff blended
mm-hmm.
to your own specifications. So the Earl Grey wanted bergamot oil added to his tea, and whenever you taste Earl Grey, that kind of flowery,
citrusy
mm-hmm. flavor, that's bergamot oil, which is actually an orange, I believe. But I think there might be some other herbs in there as well.
Bergamot Fury!
It's also a great name for a dog.
So.
Go to littlebeast.com. See some Boston Terriers.
Yes.
One of them's
bergamot.
Named Bergamot.
Bergamot Fury. So anyway, And the Lady Grey is an Earl Grey blend that's not quite as robust. And Earl Grey is not an overly robust tea. I would not put it in nearly
it's
as close
strength,
to category.
Probably.
Yeah, it's not like the breakfast teas. But if
it's
that's
not wimpy.
Even no, oh no, it has some serious like
it has some spine
to it.
But it's not like in your face.
No, it's a good stand up tea. Hey, it tastes me. But if that's a little too much for you, or you want something a little more mellow, go with the Lady Grey because it has a very mellow kind of more delicate taste to it. I think it's a killer blend. I love both. I love Earl Grey and I love the Lady Grey, but there are some days I'm in the mood for something a little more mellow, and that's what I reach for.
And there's some days when you feel like something a little bit more robust, so you can go for the full Earl, I guess.
And then there's some days that I feel like getting my pants kicked, and that's when I go for the English teas, or the breakfast teas, so. So anyway, that's your basic guide to the Earl Greys. Totally delicious. I think they are the best tea when you have a sore throat.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the bergamot oil has a soothing property to it, or if it's all in my brain, but it's really good for sore throats.
It's possible it's psychosomatic. It's possible that it's just the oils are soothing to your raw throat.
Might be. So, you know, when I had one sinus infection in Morgantown, I thought you and I were going to have a rumble when I drank, like, all the Earl Grey. You're like, where did it all go? It was, like, a week. I'm like, I was sick. So
what did you want to talk
about
next?
What did you say? Did we cover all the black teas? Awesome, Assam, Assam?
Oh, you wanted to talk about...
I just want to make sure we covered them all.
All the tea in China?
Or all the black teas in China.
Okay.
Oh, all the tea in China, that too, yeah. Sorry. I'm dead.
So, basically, the Brits have an addiction to tea. When it comes out, it is better than sliced bread, and they cannot get enough of it. The only problem is, and I kind of feel like James Burke as I'm sitting here explaining this from Connections, but... Everybody wants what's in China. They want the spices, they want the silk, they want the tea.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anything that China wants. China's like, we have enough sheep, we don't need any wool. Thanks anyway. But you can pay us silver. We'll take that, we'll take cash. So in order to feed the Brits' addiction, they were naughty. They used their colonial powers for evil. And I don't really know of any other way to use them if they're colonial, but anyway. And they used their estates in... India to grow opium to trade to China for the tea. So that's like a crack addict trading a heroin addict to get what each other wants, pretty much.
That's a horrible, vicious circle.
And the Opium Wars was actually China's war on drugs when they were trying to stop smuggling and trying to stop the British from saying, hey, look, opium, you know you want it. Come over here and buy some.
Sheila's all excited because she's found a huge gap in my historical knowledge. Because once the colonial period starts, all of my knowledge is American colonial. I have very little between the late 1600s up through literally the 20th century. Very little knowledge outside of America because that's how we're raised in the States. Mm. Once we hit the 1700s, you get hammered with American history and we ignore the rest of the world.
Right.
So I've been picking up bits and pieces and filling in the gaps in the past couple
when
years.
When I told you that, your jaw like hit the ground.
Yeah, the first time
you're
she
like,
told me,
oh
I'm like,
God.
What? That's terrible.
It is terrible. And
I could think of was cocaine for coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and let's face it, the British treated the people of India really horribly. I mean, it was equivalent to the plantations for sugarcane in the Caribbean.
Which is really bad.
Which is really, really horrible. It's like slave labor, like serfdom, you know?
Well, remember I borrowed that book on sugar?
Yeah.
A Bittersweet History, and I thought it was going to be a good cultural history of sugar. Mm-hmm. And it really turned out to be just about 3/4 of the book was slavery was bad.
Yeah.
Yes, I know slavery was bad. No, slavery was really bad. I'm like, no, I really understand that. And the book, you turn the page, and the book says, no, you don't understand how bad slavery is. Look at this.
It's pretty horrible.
Yeah, so I was a little disappointed in the book because I know how bad slavery is. I've read lots about it.
Well, I read the book Tea, the Drink That Changed the World by Laura Martin, and it gave a lot of great history about tea, but it also had the dark history chapter of tea, you know. And then eventually they figured out how... Because the British had their top scientists on it, and they figured out how to grow tea in India. And whenever you have... So they stopped growing opium and torturing the Chinese, and... But they were still and they were still treating the Indians like crap, because they were making them work on these tea plantations. But that's where you get the Assam and Assamites. And the Darjeeling, yes. Say it again, for the people.
Sure. I can't do it a second time in a row now. We'll spell it on the website. Go there. That's It's whyfatchicks.podbean.com.
Okay, so those are actually provinces of India.
Yeah.
So it would be the equivalent of a Bordeaux wine or champagne wine.
Okay, yes.
So the tea type is named after the province that it's grown in.
Okay, makes sense.
That style of tea.
There was something I wanted to throw in on that. Oh, well, as I'm filling in my historical gaps, I've discovered I adore a lot of historical fiction that's out there, and I'm addicted to the Richard Sharpe series written by Bernard Cornwell.
Mm-hmm.
Cornwell. And it's because it's about a time in history that I know nothing about. You hit the Napoleonic era, and I'm like, what? What happened over there? I don't know. I know some French people cut off some heads eventually. That's about it. Yes.
Hands and jackets.
Yes, you know, after Thomas Jefferson leaves France as an ambassador, I have no idea what's going on there. I don't know what's going on in Europe. But I really dig the books, not just for inspiring me to go learn more about the period, but also some of the cultural flavor it puts in. And one of the things I always giggle at is in it, the soldiers. It follows Richard Sharpe, a soldier in the British Empire. The soldiers are addicted to tea. Like you said, it's like a drug. I mean, they all want tea. That's their comfort. And it reminded me so much of in World War II that the soldiers were given cigarettes in their ration packs. And it was, you know, okay, guys, we got 5 minutes. Smoke them if you got them. Then we're going to go take that barn over there. The same thing with the British. They're like, okay, guys, we've got 20 minutes. Go ahead and make some tea.
Who's got the tea leaves?
Who's got the tea leaves in their pack? I just shake the gunpowder out. It'll just make it taste good anyway. We're going to go make a hearty cup of tea, and then we're going to go over there and take that farm or something.
Right.
And it's the same kind of mentality. So I really like that parallel, too.
Hmm. It is interesting.
It is. So is that all we have on black tea?
I think so.
I have to ask, what's your stance on Lipton? Not the man, the product.
It's okay. It's like the McDonald's of tea, though. I mean, you can go anywhere, and you know if you buy Lipton, you know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
He was an extreme innovator. The man.
Yes.
Because you know it's going to go back to there eventually. And in Tea, the Drink That Changed the World, they talk a lot about it. And didn't they talk about it, too, in...
Connections?
Did they talk about Lipton in Farringer, England?
I think she had a blurb about him.
Okay.
Yeah, she mentioned the family a little bit.
Okay, well, it goes more into it in Tea, the Drink That Changed the World, and they talk about how innovative he was. It seems like the Scots are, like, totally innovative when it comes to stuff, but...
Well, there's the fellow with the vacuum pump for pumping up mines and everything, too, so
yeah.
This is getting very James Burke, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. I love James Burke.
He's so cool.
He is.
He's our hero. Anyway, him and Alton Brown, it's like, you know, we should put them up on a shelf with, like, little portraits
and
busts.
I should have busts of them.
Yes. That would be perfect bookends for us. Alton and Mr. Burke. Okay,
yes.
Go ahead.
Well, he was very innovative when it came to marketing,
mm-hmm.
and I think he was the one that actually started putting tea in bags, wasn't
yes.
he? He was
well,
the one that, was he that
came
innovative?
That came later, because that was a 20th century innovation.
Okay.
Because remember, she was talking in the Good, Fair, and Cheer of England about how there was a lot of discussion about whether or not bagging tea would be the downfall. Of tea.
Of loose leaf tea.
And I think that was definitely past his time period, because wasn't he around in the 1700s?
1800s? Yeah, I think so.
But it was still the Lipton family that started it, I believe.
Right. So, I don't know. If you gave me the choice between Lipton and anything else,
yes.
Generally, I would take anything else. I would take Twinings, I would take...
Tetley.
I like the flavor of Tetley.
I do,
it's got like a nice flavor to it. And they make really good beer, too, by the way. If you go to a British-style pub, sometimes you can find Tetley on tap.
And the type of tea that's in these mass-marketed bags are orange Pekoe, right?
Yes.
Yes, which is just a variety of tea.
Yeah.
It's a grade of tea, actually.
It's the grade of tea that it is. It's not the flavor.
Yes.
Which I always was disappointed when I was given tea as a child and it didn't taste like oranges. So, I was expecting some sort of hot orange drink or something, I don't know.
So if you get some tea and it says orange Pekoe on it, it's trying to be all, like, hoity-toity, because it swanky. Says that, trying to look swanky, it's not. That's just the grade of tea. It's just, like, Lipton, pretty much.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, I mean, I agree with you 100% on all those points, but I do like Lipton and Tetley for making iced tea.
Yeah.
If I'm not going to make a specialty iced tea or not trying to clear something out of the cabinet because we have too much... I do like to fall back on Red Rose, Lipton, and Tetley for iced teas, because they do make a good iced tea. Because they're robust enough that they stand out, even though it's a chilled drink, because when you chill something, it usually numbs your taste buds a little bit, you don't get as much flavor from it. But it's not so robust like making, you know, iced tea out of a breakfast tea.
Oh my god.
That it's like drinking cold coffee and you start to sweat a little bit because you're so energized from it. So I have to admit they have their place. And because they're so cheap, because they're economical teas.
That means you can make... You can buy, like, a box of Red Rose and make iced tea from it all summer long.
Exactly. You know, a couple dollars, a bag of sugar, and you're good to go. So.
Yeah.
Good stuff. And we used to cheat in West Virginia. We would use regular, like, Red Rose or Tetley leaves, or bags, and we would mix in one or two flavored bags with it of something else. Yeah. So you had a mildly flavored iced tea that came out really good. We used to do that with the peach one.
The peach tea from, was it Books A Million?
Barnes & Noble. They had it marked down. The Hartley & Sons?
Yes, Hartley & Sons, which actually makes decent tea as well, even though it's in bags. Bag tea is, like, really, it's come back from the brink of, I don't know, mediocrity, I guess.
Well, let's cover bag tea after we finish the rest of the tea types.
I mean, we did talk about it in a little bit in the episode before, but we can definitely go back to it.
So, on to green teas. And this is your favorites, I know.
Yeah.
These are your favorites, rather.
There's a lot of different green teas that I really, really like. One of them being gunpowder tea, which whenever it's picked... whenever it's picked, it's rolled up into a tight little ball, and then it's dried. So it's this little pellet of tea, and you just take like a little spoonful and put it in, and then when they get infused, they unfurl.
A little spoonful, you apply like, you know, going to Wimpy's, you get the little burger.
Just a dab will do you kind of thing.
If you put a giant spoonful in there, you take the lid off your teapot, and the leaves are like coming
waving
up through
at
the
you.
Thing.
Yeah, so. It looks like you've got a pond in there or something.
Yes.
So yeah, with gunpowder tea, it's concentrated, you only need a little bit.
Strong juju.
Oh, it is very definitely strong juju. It's a very robust green tea, and that's one of the reasons why I like it, because it's got a lot of flavor. It's got a lot of punch to it. I also love matcha, which is a Japanese-style tea, and it's basically green tea leaves that are grown in specific regions in Japan. I don't recall off the top of my head. But, of course, each region has its own flavors and everything, and then it's dried and ground into a powder. Now, the cool thing about this is that if you've had green tea flavored anything, like green tea flavored ice cream, frozen yogurt, cappuccino, or the frappuccinos.
For the most part, there may be some low quality green tea flavored things you haven't that don't have this, but go ahead.
Okay. Then you've probably had matcha. Mm-hmm. It's got a sweet, kind of grassy flavor. It's very, very nice, very balanced. And it's delicate without being spineless.
Yes. And, like, if you've gone to Yogan Fruz, they pull out the big container, the tea powder, it's matcha powder. You can see it on the thing. If you go to some place that makes smoothies and they're adding green powder to your tea or your smoothie, that's definitely going to be matcha. So I love it.
Mm, me too. It's a great everyday green tea. I love it for that.
I know you've said you don't have to have all the cool little green tea tools to make matcha with a whisk and a special cup and everything. You can do it with just a metal whisk and a cup with a spout on it at home. But what are the key points to remember when making it?
Okay. So if you're going to go ahead and make matcha the traditional way from the powder, and I'll give you a cheater here at the end.
And I want to also toss out there, too, that a lot of dirty hippie stores sell matcha powder, too.
Yeah. Actually, the health food store in Oshawa, Feel Good. Feel Good. They have they have matcha in there, and it's only $14.99 for a can of it, and that'll last you for a while.
Forever.
Because I think it's only like an eighth of a teaspoon or something that you actually use.
It's very small amount. Because it's strong as well.
It's strong
as well.
Juju as well.
Well, you ground it. It's ground up. The tea
it's
leaf,
like concentrated.
You've taken X amount of surface area and you've multiplied it, almost at taking it to an exponential power.
Right.
You've created so much more surface area when you create a powder.
Yep.
So yeah, it's going to last that much longer by weight versus the same weight of tea leaves.
Yeah, definitely.
So you're good to go on that. But so if you don't have it in your local dirty hippie store, maybe talk to them and see about getting it in, because I bet if you want it, there's going to be 10 other people in the area who'd like to try it, too.
Yeah, and you can also find some places online that sell it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also a cheater thing that I'll discuss at the end. But, okay, so if you're going to prepare matcha the traditional Japanese way, you just need a measuring implement, because you don't want to have too much. You don't just grab a teaspoon and throw some stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's an eighth of a teaspoon, or one of those little matcha
hockey
spoons.
Sticks.
It looks like a hockey stick, and it picks up the perfect amount, I guess, for it. You need a whisk. You need a bowl with a spout on it. And then your drinking devices. You know,
your drinking horn, whatever.
Yeah, your vessels. So what you do is you get the water steaming, but not boiling. It's very important, because if you boil the water when you're making green tea, you can lose a lot of the flavors.
Make it bitter.
It makes it bitter,
It'll
definitely.
Almost cook the leaves and turn them bitter.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if it almost pulls an oxidization.
Maybe.
Kind of thing to
so
it.
So whips some tannins in there.
Yeah, and it makes it more like black tea.
Yeah, because you can use boiling water for black tea. That's no
problem
it doesn't
at
all.
Hurt it. You can drive over black tea with a semi and scrape it up and microwave it and then make tea out of it, and you're probably going to be okay. It's black tea. It's indestructible. So the cockroaches are going to drink after the nuclear holocaust. It's still going to be here, too.
Okay. So you get your water boiling.
Or steaming.
You either boil it and let it cool down a bit, or you get it up to steaming, and then you use it. You put your measuring unit of matcha into the bowl. You pour the steaming water over top of it, and then you whisk it. You whisk it until it's frothy. It's called jade froth in Japanese, so there you go. And then you take it and you pour it into the different serving cups, and then you drink, and then you do it all over again and prepare another bowl of it.
And you can drink the sludge, right?
Yeah.
I drink the sludge. I don't know if you're supposed to, but I like the taste.
In the tea ceremony, when they actually do, like, the full ceremony thing, they throw the slop out, but you can drink it. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, more antioxidants, you know. It's going to hopefully equal out all the other crap.
All the cheeseburgers that we eat.
Yes, all the cheeseburgers. We need something to balance those out. Well, also, the tea ceremony, I know we talked about this before. I think most Westerners our age, our exposure to that is Karate Kid Part 2.
Right.
But they actually got a lot right.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad exposure. What they did was very correct for the tea ceremony.
I've read a lot about it. One of the best examples I've seen of it is in, I'm not sure exactly which book it's in, but it's in Laura Jo Roland's Sannomichiro Mysteries, where the one guy, who's actually a suspect, I think, or he knows something that's going on, is entertaining one of the local ladies. She's nobility, and he takes her through the tea ceremony as a matter of, like, a social interaction, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's a social call. He has her over for tea, and that's what it entails.
I'd also like to point out, too, since we're on that topic of those books, the ones I was reading recently, I can't remember the names of them, but it's the Japanese mystery set in the 11th century, before tea became really big in Japan. There's a lot of reference in there about how he will offer tea to people because he's kind of taken up the habit of drinking it, and they're like, oh, I don't want that crap, give me wine. So it's a nice juxtaposition between the Sannomichiro, which is like 500
Sagagawa?
Years later. Sugawara.
Sugawara.
Yes, okay. Really good series. We're going to create some shelves on our Goodreads of
ZFC. We'll create
ZFC.
An account for...
Yeah, we'll just create a ZFC Goodreads account so you guys can go check out some of the stuff we've talked about and read some reviews of it. But back to tea. So that's a neat, I thought, little piece of tea wasn't always king in Japan.
Yeah.
So.
I know the medieval Japanese adopted a lot of Chinese stuff. But then, of course, the closer you get to modern times, the more reviled it is. It's like, we made it better, or it's inferior.
Yes.
But anyway, like in Edo period is what I mean by modern times. I'm not talking about now.
Yes, whereas back in, you know, the 9th, 10th century, 11th century,
were totally
judged by how
Chinese
much
you
knew
were.
About Chinese culture, how versed you were in
the
Chinese
classics.
So,
yeah.
Yes. So back to green tea. So matcha rocks. And what's the cheater method?
The cheater method is to go to your local specialty store or go online and get some Republic of Tea matcha, which comes in
baggies.
50 bags of tea for a canister for $14.99 American. So... Tracy almost flipped her lid when I bought it, and then she's like, oh, wait, it's like an extra big can.
Yeah.
She thought it was only 25, but it was actually 50 tea bags, and they're really, really good.
And they're great for travel. If you're somebody who travels a lot, you still want to take some matcha with you. You don't want to take a whisk and a cup and all this other crap with you. Just get the tea leaves from Republic. And another cool thing the Republic of Tea does is if you already have the canister that you've bought, you could just buy the bags.
And just 50 refill your tin.
Bag increment and refill your tin. So you can save a buck or two. You're not being as wasteful. It's kind of a nice thing.
They're trying to encourage you to be a little bit more green. Mm-hmm. And it probably costs less to ship the bag than it does to ship a tin.
Exactly.
It's using less products because...
It's easier on them. They don't have to produce as many tins and things. So it's...
Yeah.
I approve of this dirty hippie tactic. Let me put it that way. So... Well, it's so rare to see something that is environmentally sound that's actually cheaper.
Yeah.
Usually, if you're trying to be greener, it's going to cost you more green.
Yeah.
But in this case... They have a solution that is environmentally good.
Yeah.
They're saving packaging, and it doesn't cost you more. That's awesome.
Well, I mean, those tea tins are going to last forever.
Oh, I know. They're indestructible.
You know, I mean, I've still got a Twinings Earl Grey tin from, like, 10 years ago almost, and it's, like, all rusted, but it's still good.
Yeah. Well, we take good care of them. The one that you have, you know, had a hard life.
It did.
Being knocked around and had things stuffed in it and everything, so.
Yeah.
But anyway, so green tea. What else is there? I know there's my favorite, Dragon Well.
Oh, yes.
Which is a flat one.
Yeah. And that I think that has to do with how it's pressed.
He has to do the drawing and pressing this.
Yeah. Well, you're the expert on Dragon Ball. I know we did cover a bit of this in the Montreal episode,
yes,
but...
I don't know a lot about it, except it's only grown in certain areas. The process is... It's picked by hand, practically. And when they dry it, or whatever they do to it, it has a flat leaf. Like Sheila talked about the gunpowder tea that curls up really little. Some of them are kind of twisted, some of them are kind of rolled. The Dragon Ball tea dries, and it's almost perfectly flat.
Mm.
Now, that doesn't mean the leaves don't expand when you put them in hot water.
Yeah.
They definitely do expand, but they don't do the dramatic unfolding that the gunpowder tea does.
The explosion.
The explosive tea. And Dragon Ball is just, it has such a delicate but hearty flavor to it. Mm. It reminds me of matcha. It's almost like the full leaf version of matcha. I would like to find out, maybe do a little research and find out how close Dragon Well is to the leaves they use for matcha.
Right.
Because I have a feeling they're very, very similar. Because the tastes are so similar, and if you ground Dragon Well up and increased all that volume, the leaf's exposure to the water by increasing the volume by grinding it, I bet you'd get the same robustness that you get in matcha.
Well, I know that there are actually Chinese ground green teas that they can't call themselves matcha, but essentially that's what it is. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And from whence... The one that's made in China isn't necessarily lower quality, it's just different.
Yes. Nice. So, that's my favorite Chinese tea. And there's all kinds of different green Chinese teas. When I was there, you walked into a tea store and it was overwhelming.
Mm.
And they had teas that would go up to, like, $100 for a tin.
Yeah.
I know the one that we really enjoyed over there was about $100 a tin. It was 800 renminbi, and it was an 8-to-1 exchange on money at that point.
Yeah.
So we didn't buy any of that. Because I liked tea, but not that much. Now I wish I had,
yeah.
Because I enjoy it so much more since I've explored the different teas out there.
But you can find it here, though.
Yes.
And eventually someday, I know we're going to take a trip back, and we'll just save up some extra money and get some tea while we're
back
there.
A lot of tea.
Yes.
So I totally felt like a smuggler when I came back, because we had been given these two huge canisters of tea that were like Dragon Well. It wasn't quite Dragon Well, but it was very close to it. And these were huge canisters. They were like about, 8 or 9 inches tall by about 3 or 4 inches wide. And it was just full of tea. I must have had a pound of tea between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I had so much crap crammed in my suitcase, and I could only bring back so many pounds of stuff, so I was trying to cram these tea bags in. I ended up only saving one canister. I left the other empty canister behind. I took the tea out, stuffed it in a plastic Ziploc bag, and put it in my suitcase.
And it was kind of all fluffy and green.
Green, and I sweated the entire way through customs, every step, because I thought they were going to open up my bags and just haul me in and ask me about the green, fluffy, leafy stuff in my bag that was in a plastic baggie.
It smelled really good.
It didn't occur to me until I'd already gotten to the airport and checked my luggage that, oh, that looks really bad. So I think that next trip to China, all of the tea will stay in its original packaging so I don't have to sweat on the way back.
Well, China isn't really known for their herbal recreation, as far as I know. I mean, if you're coming back from Jamaica, then maybe...
Yes, they might give me a funny look.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it was something that just made me twitch. I thought, that was a bad idea. Fortunately, customs just didn't care.
Mm.
I looked so haggard coming back from China.
They
were like,
your
luggage whatever.
Over and kicked it over like they did everyone else's.
Yes, pretty much. Didn't lose anything, thank God. It was not that trip, so.
Yeah.
But that's most of my experience with the green teas. Now, white teas are a subset of green teas?
Yeah, white teas are... They're processed the same way as a green tea, but they're grown in the shade, so they don't get the chlorophyll, which makes them have a much more delicate taste, and it makes them much more highly prized. And I've even heard of, like, there's some places in China that have, like, monkeys go and pick the tea leaves because they're so high up or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
So white tea's good. I'm not as
it's
big
very
a
popular
fan
now,
of it.
But it's okay. There's lots of other teas that I like more.
I think it's a marketing thing, because they're pushing the antioxidants, and there's a lot of antioxidants in white tea, even though green tea has a ton, too.
I think white tea actually has more.
Yes, and that's why
they're
pushing
it.
Oh, you should have this many. I'm just going to drink a second cup of green tea and get the same amount. I'm okay. I'm all about having a second cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. So that's...
Yeah, I'm just going to have the second cup, and, you know, well, look, I get even more oxidants than if I had one cup of white tea. Though it's not bad, and we've had some blends that are really good with it, but I think on its own, it doesn't bring a lot to the party.
No. It's a really, really delicate flavor.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that I need, like, the heartiest, most robust things, but I like things with a lot of flavor.
Yes.
And I have it, you know, so that I can have it once in a while, but that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a once in a while treat when I feel like something really mild and delicate.
Yes. The white tea and peach bags that we had were really good, and I think that was one of the Lipton ones.
No, it was Hartley and Sons.
No, there was one by Lipton we had,
there
too.
There was a Lipton one, you're right.
So Lipton is trying to redeem itself with better quality teas. Mm-hmm. We are proud of them. They're not all evil. So, and on to the last one. They're dreaded red teas.
Oh. Crippling abdominal pains.
Oh, no, let's talk about red teas, and then we'll give the story.
I've had red teas before. Some of them are really, really delicious. But there was one we got that was the President's Choice Rooibos.
It was a blend.
And when I first saw the word, I thought it was like Rubios.
So did I. See how I used to say it?
Yeah, but it's Rooibos. Anyway, so the President's Choice teas, they make some really decent loose leaf tea, because we've got like the English breakfast, and it's pretty good.
Oh, the English breakfast is really
good. The green
tea
is actually all right, you know, it's fine.
We still have the chai that we have to make up at some point. I need to get some lactate so we can do that. But the Rooibos,
they had them on sale, they were like, what, $2 each or something for
a tin? Like a tin.
Or a dollar a tin.
And they still sell them now, that's so weird, they weren't clearing them out, they just wanted to get rid of that batch for some reason.
I guess.
Probably because they were giving people crippling abdominal cramps.
So we bought one of each type for a dollar a can, and it's like a big sized can. It's like a 12-ounce can almost?
Almost.
It's a tall, tall can. So for that much tea for a buck, you can't go wrong. Unless, of course, you have a certain reaction to whatever the heck it is that they put in their Rooibos tea. Because it's not just the Rooibos needles.
Yes.
There's other stuff in there. And I have a feeling that it was an herb or something.
Yes.
Or a spice that they put in there that didn't agree with us.
Well, let me give you the whole background. We bought this, and it was around the same time that two of our wonderful friends, Jamie and Daisy, had sent us for Christmas these tea mugs that you can get at Chapters now. And they're the ones that have little strainers in them and everything, and they're perfect for traveling. We talked about them on the Montreal episode.
Yeah, I think they're called, like, tea teasers or something. I'll
something
put the
like
link
that.
Up so mm-hmm. you can check them out.
If you like tea and you like to take it with you in the car, or you work someplace where you have access to a lot of hot water and you want to drink tea at work,
it's perfect for loose leaf tea.
The way to go, which is what I did at work, because where we worked, we had hot water on the one faucet, the spigot by the coffee thing.
Yeah.
So I could get all the free hot water I wanted. I had kept the little tin of Rooibos tea in my desk drawer, and Sheila would come by and grab what she wanted. She'd keep some tea there too. And every day I'd come into work and I'd pour some fresh Rooibos in my cup, I'd go fill it up with hot water, and I drank it all day. So I'm a thirsty person. I drink a lot of liquids. So I would go through 4 or 5 cups of this Rooibos a day. And these are 20-ounce tea mugs. These aren't little tea mugs. So you figure I'm drinking at least 1/2 gallon of tea a day of this Rooibos.
Yeah.
And I did not make the connection for almost a month. I would get to work. After about an hour, I was completely wiped out, and I just felt horrible. I would have these horrible abdominal cramps. I thought something was wrong with me. I just felt crummy. I was okay on the weekends. If it was one of those days where I had picked up a big bottle of soda before I came into work and I didn't drink any tea, I was fine. And Sheila finally decided to have a hearty serving of the Rooibos, and she drank like 2 cups of it.
It only took me 2 cups.
It took her 2 cups. Because she'd drink a little bit before, but she never drank it to the excess I did. It was one of those days where it was like right before payday, we didn't have a whole lot of spare cash on us, we didn't buy any soda.
Mm.
You just drank tea all day, and you're like, oh my god, I feel terrible, I think it's the tea. And then we started to look at the tea itself, and it had chamomile in the blend,
which, for some reason, I don't know if it's psychosomatic, but it works on me like it's some sort of sleeping drug, which is why I felt totally run down and crappy, because I can drink chamomile tea, and it'll like put me to sleep. I can barely get to the bed, pretty much.
Well, and then we actually looked at the rest of everything that was in this blend, and it had a ton of stuff in the blend. And it wasn't, like, chemicals. It was all natural.
No, it was all different herbs and stuff.
But Sheila and I are looking at it, and she's like, no wonder you probably feel terrible. I'm sure there's at least 2 or 3 things in here that you're reacting badly to.
Yeah.
So I went cold turkey on the Rooibos. And we had already drank, like, 3/4 of the tin.
Yeah.
That was the ironic part. So we finished the tea, and then we didn't drink it anymore. And then I was right as rain the next day. Went through work, wasn't wiped out after the first hour.
No crippling
no
abdominal
more crippling
pains.
Abdominal pains anymore. And it was perfect. So it's not that Rooibos is bad, but
there's
some of the blends.
Now,
the other one, the begins with a K. The one
Kalahari.
Brand, yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. And I never
had
any ill effects at all.
That.
Yeah.
That's why I went to town, because we had had that stuff before and I loved it.
Yeah. And this stuff, it tasted really good because there was like little like pieces of like lemon peel and stuff in it. It was really, really good. It was like
fruity.
A really chunky blend. Yeah,
yes.
There was like lots of different stuff in it.
Oop.
But for whatever reason, there's something in it that reacted to both of us.
Yes. Because normally I love Rooibos.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a great flavor. It's very hearty and it's something different. It's almost sweet without being sweet.
It's like making iced tea but without having to use sugar.
Yep, exactly.
So those
are the basic categories of tea. That's the ZFC crash course to tea. If you're not sure, go out and try something different. Now, the bag tea versus loose leaf tea debate we've already had. But don't be prejudiced against bag teas, because, like, the Hartley & Son stuff, there's a lot of premium bag teas that are out there that are very good, and it's bagged for convenience.
They're using
because
better
they're using
better.
Lower quality
They're not
teas.
Using the fannings as much anymore, which
yes.
is, like, the dust.
Yes. And for a lot of the herbal teas, too, you're better off with a bag tea, just so you don't have all those weird floaty bits.
Yeah.
And now, we have never had the flowering tea. The ones that go in the cool little
no,
teapots.
No, we've got stuff for your mom.
Mom, and we never drank it.
Yeah.
My mother does enjoy different teas, and one year we'd gotten her the little flowering teapot with the tea buds, and we've gotten good reports from her that they're delicious, and they're very pretty, too.
I really like rose tea, too, which I know that you're not crazy on.
Yeah, it's okay.
You don't really like the flowery taste, but I really like rose green tea.
It's okay. I'm hit or miss on it, so. Now, memorable places we've had tea.
Oh, yeah.
Bethlehem.
Yes. Was it Granny McCarthy's Tea House?
Granny McCarthy's Tea House in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I dug my heels in and going there. We were there with Rick. And I was like, no, I don't want to go to a tea house. Because I thought tea house. And I thought, like, little southern ladies with doilies and cucumber sandwiches.
Yeah. And lots of mayonnaise.
Yes. And I didn't want to go there. But we needed to go eat breakfast someplace. And they drugged me in there. And it was the best mistake. Or rather, it could have been the worst mistake of my life not going in.
Right.
The place was amazing.
It was awesome. It's not only did they have a great selection of teas, but they had great food. And I'm pretty sure we mentioned this maybe in the breakfast episode, but they did like an Irish breakfast with Irish loin bacon, which is a lot like pea meal bacon, eggs, and potato farls, which are kind of like potato pancakes. Farl is Gaelic for a quarter. So usually they make it in a circle, and you cut it into quarters, and you give somebody half of it pretty much to put their eggs on.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
the absolute best thing for mopping up. The yolk.
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to serve it on top of the farls, the eggs, either sunny side up or over easy, and plop them on there. So when you cut into the egg, the
farl soaks it up.
Just goes all over it. Oh, it was so good. And their tea selection was great.
It was like a tea pub, essentially.
Yes.
It was like a pub, but without the alcohol.
Yes.
It was a temperance pub, I
suppose. Yes, a temperance pub. Great place. Strongly recommend it. We'll post information up about it. They have a website. And we should actually post the farl recipe, too.
Yeah.
Post the link to the farl recipe
sure.
that you use. Because they're a great breakfast alternative if you're tired of home fries and you're tired of hash browns, but you want something carby.
Yeah.
To go with your breakfast.
It's a different way, and it's a great way to use up leftover mashed potatoes,
yes.
which I'm sure is the reason why it was actually invented in the first place. Because, and if it's garlic mashed potatoes,
They're
no
good.
Worries.
Oh, yeah.
If you've already put butter and salt and pepper in it, no problem. It just means that you've got extra flavor, you know? It just means you don't have to put salt and pepper on it at the table.
Well, even in the last episode, we talked about the holiday stuff, and we talked about Bionix. And when I made the mixture, the potato and cheese mixture for the Bionix, I made way too much, which I didn't think was a problem, neither did Sheila, because we just scooped it into a container, and she made farls the next day with it.
Yeah.
And they were like cheesy farls, and they were really good.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as you have a potato mixture, you can do some kind of farl with it. Good stuff. And it's very easy and quick to do.
Oh, super easy.
You can do it
in
like 5 minutes.
You don't need to use a rolling pin or anything.
No, just
like,
do it by hand.
It's pretty much you just add, a cup of potatoes to half a cup of flour, and then mix it all together and pat it out, cut it, fry it, you're done. Good to go.
But we had that with a nice hearty pot of that cream of Earl Grey stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And that was great. And we had also gotten one of the super antioxidant pink blends there for my mom.
Oh, yeah.
And she loved it. She said it was great, too. So good selection of tea there, lots of good loose leaf teas, and delicious food. Go for one of the weekend brunches. You can't go wrong.
And one of the cream Earl Grey, I've seen it not only there, but in a couple other places. I think you said it was like vanilla?
It tastes like it has vanilla in it of some kind.
It just kind
of
like smooths it out, rounds it out a little bit.
Yeah.
It's really good.
And there's also that tea place by my sister in Maryland that had the great tea selection.
And I cannot remember what the name of it was.
It's near Havre de Grace, and it's in one of the shopping plazas where there's like a GameStop and a couple other places. We'll look it up and post it, because we've gotten some great tea blends from there.
Yeah. Because
that's where we had the Russian Samovar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which was a killer black tea blend. I mean, it had a lot of good flavors to it. It's an example of how, you know, there's black tea, but then you mix all this other stuff with it, and you get a whole new blend out of it every time.
Now, if you're looking for some place to get some loose leaf tea, there's a chain called Ten Ren Teas, and they're in a lot of major cities, both in Canada and the U.S. But also, do a Google search and put in tea merchant and then the name of your hometown, because I did that, and we found a great place over in Whitby.
Yes.
As simple as good, and it's a guy that does his own one-man show. And maybe we can get over there and get an interview with him or something at some point in time. But he has a great selection of tea.
Oh, that one blend of green tea he had.
It's Green Mountain, and it's like...
It's killer.
Really robust. It tastes almost like gunpowder, but it's not rolled.
It's not as strong.
It's not as strong, but it's a nice, really flavorful, robust tea.
Yes. It's going to probably become one of our go-to green teas, I think. We'd like to go there and spend lots of money on him because we like his shop and he has good green tea.
So if you're in the Durham region area, check out Simple is Beautiful. It's on Thixon Street.
I think it was Thixon.
Thixon Road in Whitby.
We'll post it up on the map.
I'll definitely post it up.
We'll have all the details on the Podbean site so you guys can check it out. So the Ten Ren now, we went there on our honeymoon in D.C. It was just outside of D.C. in College Park, Maryland, and they had Dragon Well, and I was excited they had Dragon Well. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, and that actually, that Ten Ren was set up like a cafe.
So we actually ate there.
You could pick out what tea you wanted, and not only could you buy some to take home, but they'd make some there for you.
And you had bubble tea, too.
And then there's also a Ten Ren in the Pacific Mall, and I'm sure there's a couple more in Toronto as well. Ten Ren, I think, also has, did they have a place in Baltimore?
I thought they only had the one in College Park, but you'd have to hit the website to find out.
But check it out, because they've got lots of different locations.
Lots of good stuff. Anything you want to add about delicious, delicious, tasty tea? Any tips, any tricks we need to add on there? I can't think of anything except, you know, those little tea mugs are great. The travel ones. We've already said that before. Don't boil your tea, your water, if you're going to toss it in your green tea. You can make awesome flavored iced tea by just mixing a couple flavored bags in with your Lipton or Tetley or what have you.
Right. I think that's pretty much it. I'd like to do an episode on tea the meal at some point, and maybe, like, make a tea, like, make, like, little cucumber sandwiches and stuff, and we could talk about that. Am I getting too anglophile for you?
God, you're going to make me eat cucumber sandwiches someday. I know.
I'll dress all steampunk.
Okay, I'll think about it.
The listeners won't be able to see it, but you will.
Well, maybe we can do a video cast.
Oh, that would be a cool idea, actually.
We have enough bandwidth to do it on Podbean.
Yeah. And
we have had a few requests.
Oh, have we?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, cool. I didn't know that. All right, well, maybe we'll do a steampunk tea.
We'll see.
At some point.
Well, it'll be a distant future kind of thing. But if you guys have any questions, if we've gotten something horribly wrong, we've mangled it, please don't be afraid to let us know.
Yeah.
We love hearing from our listeners.
Love
the
mail.
The few,
hate
the
mail.
Proud.
Whatever you want, send it to survivefatchicks@gmail.com.
The few, the proud, the listeners. We're going to toss up a shelf, or rather build an account on Goodreads for all the ZFC books that we've reviewed. Mm-hmm. We'd also like to take the time to point out we're probably going to do a few more book reviews in the future because we're watching our pennies right now. We're both unemployed, and eating out gets expensive, but reading is free. And this is a podcast about food and culture. So we're going to read a lot of books on different types of foods. We've got one coming up we're going to do. It's a beer book. It should be the next episode. It's just
An intemperate history of beer in Canada.
It's killer.
Yeah.
Just look forward to, hopefully, a few more book reviews and some other things going on.
Because I really love to talk about culture, and it's so intertwined.
Yes.
Some of my favorite episodes that we've done have been about
food
and how it relates to our culture.
If you want to get to know a culture and their people, you have to eat their food.
Yeah.
You will not fully understand a culture until you've eaten what they eat.
Yeah.
And that's probably some famous quote out there somewhere. I think I've ripped it off.
Lovingly ripped off from.
Lovingly ripped off.
Aristotle. I don't know.
Anyway, this is Tracy.
And this is Sheila. And we're Survive Fat Chicks. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed the Survive Fat Chicks podcast. Please add us as a friend on MySpace and or Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Please email your comments, questions, or suggestions to zweifatchicks@gmail.com. That's zweifatchicks@gmail.com. Our theme music is Hot Swing by Kevin MacLeod. Our podcasts, like Mr. MacLeod's music, are protected under a Creative Commons attribute copyright. You can make copies of our shows and share them with friends, but please make sure that credit is given. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and we hope you have a great day.